Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about gaming gear. What do you have?
All right, gaming gear. So I got a lot of stuff piled on my desk here.
And so do I.
Yeah,
to begin with, I thought, I won't have that much stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I need another table.
Okay, should we start with the obvious? Do you want to jump straight into your first image there? Okay, great. So what are we looking at, Dan?
Yeah, so here we are looking... Yep, here we are looking at the original D&D Volume 1, 1974 recommended equipment list. And, you know, if you look at the bottom of it, it's actually very much the same stuff we would use today. There's paper and pencils and graph paper, and you need a referee, you need players. Kind of the third thing down is some dice. Obviously, you need some kind of set of Dungeons & Dragons, a role-playing game. And then the second thing's kind of interesting thing that before the dice or the paper or the pencils or the players, you need outdoor survival. So I have that, right? So here's my original D&D set here. Obviously, I got that. And you got to have outdoor survival. So I got that. Maybe we don't need to talk about that too much. But that's this wilderness game from Avalon Hill, like 1972. And the original D&D wilderness rules key directly into this. So a lot of us like it. It has a wonderful wilderness map. So you got to have that for starters.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've covered Will Outdoor Survival a bit on our Hex Map episode. But apparently got to have your outdoor survival.
Got to have that.
Just like you got to have your copy of Chainmail, I see.
Right. You got to have, the fourth thing down there, you got to have a copy of Chainmail. You know, it's funny because a lot of the original D&D guys now, like people at New Gygax, actually claim that you totally don't need that and that all the references to Chainmail were purely just marketing fluff from Gygax. And so I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4 people that played with him say that was kind of really fallacious, actually.
So, as an interesting side note, there was a brief period of time where I got into bookbinding as a hobby, creating books. Hang on, I think I have mine here somewhere.
Well, I have it here.
Yeah.
Right. So what Paul's about to show you is this, and it's his custom bound copy of the original D&D digest books, and it's the single best gift I ever got.
So,
and it is
Right, so my copy is different from your copy, both in sort of the presentation. Mine was mine was the second test book. I later made fancier versions with a faux leather bound and a stamped title that I gave to Tim Kask and Frank Menzer. Your copy, I think, has less content. Is that right?
Correct. I do have Chainmail, and I have the three little brown books, and I have the first supplement.
Right.
But I don't have anything past that.
So here's the interesting thing. My copy has all of the supplements, but does not have Chainmail. And I think ultimately the final thing that I made for Tim and Frank has all of that.
Gotcha.
So here's my question. I know you carried that book around and used that book.
Right.
How often do you find yourself flipping open to the Chainmail section?
Well, not much during a game. When I'm prepping... really more than you'd expect. I frequently look back to missile weapon ranges, the man-to-man combat start there, the monster descriptions, because the actual D&D monster book does say whatever abilities they had in Chainmail, they have that same stuff, plus all this new stuff. So during my prep work, I actually look at it really frequently, actually.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I definitely intentionally left it out of the copy I made for myself originally, just because I was worried about page count and it becoming too ridiculously big.
Yeah.
But also because I've maybe read Chainmail once and never looked back.
You know, it's funny because the old school players I've been seeing, you know, talking lately are also in agreement that you don't need that. But I look back to that a lot.
Interesting.
But reasonable, you don't technically needed, I guess.
Fascinating. Yeah. All right, so chainmail aside, let's see, what else do we need? A three-ring notebook, apparently?
Yes, and, you know, yeah, and, you know, I've seen pictures of Gygax, you know, running games, and that was basically what he had. He basically had a big three-ring notebook with, you know, map on one page and, you know, key on the next page.
You know, admittedly, when I was running a longer-run campaign of D&D, I did use a three-ring notebook. I think I don't use it when I'm running, like, one-off stuff, or I don't use it when I'm using 5th edition, but we'll get into that in a bit.
I think it solves a lot of problems. Hmm. Now, interestingly, so, like, and again, I started running a campaign, and then I was like, oh, my God, I have this, like, paper blizzard that I can't deal with. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the three-ring notebook was the right answer. Now, interestingly, for me, I use a digest size, right? I use a half-sized paper for, you know, all my adventures, all my documents, and I have a half-sized three-ring binder that my whole campaign's. Whoops, that's a mess.
Is that just because that was the size of the original booklets? That's okay. Your sources.
I find there's a whole bunch of advantages. Yeah. Number one, yes, it's the same size as the original booklets, so I can take one of these pages and put it in the same box if I want to. Two, I find that it saves space at the table, right? So it uses, if I'm constrained, you know, and one thing for me is I travel a lot and I don't know, like, what kind of surface I'm going to be playing on, takes up half as much space behind my screen, which I think is great. Three, it gets me in the habit of something that is easy to home print, right?
Yep.
So all my documents are in this format that I can easily print on a standard sheet and then staple, right? And I have a nice little booklet, which is great. And then number four, I think there's an advantage, is that I can only get one column, right? Just one column of information. And I find that helps focus my eyes when I'm running a game, as opposed to a big, a full page that has two or three columns to
Interesting.
It. And so I actually find there's a whole bunch of advantages that I do need a hole punch, and I do a whole lot of, like, slicing pages in half. Yeah. But I really like this.
That's fascinating. So I've never looked into a half-size three-ring binder, though I love the idea. I certainly when I buy a printer, and my current printer I bought specifically looking for, will it do two-sided printing, and so that I can print booklet. And I treated myself to a deep-throated stapler, which will staple at a depth of 5.5 inches, which is what you need for stapling your booklet.
Holy gamoly. Great. That's great.
Yeah, I think I got it kicking around here somewhere.
That's great.
Anyway,
I have a hole punch. You know, there every once in a while I go, maybe it would be easier if I used, like, full sized pages. But then actually the main clincher for me is that, but then I would have to put two columns on a page and I would get frustrated looking that in a game. So, so it's unusual, but I like it.
I think if you're printing booklets that frequently, I definitely recommend pop down to Staples or onto Amazon and get yourself a deep throated stapler.
Interesting. Cool idea.
Okay, so what else is on the list here? Graph paper.
Graph paper, gotta have that.
Drafting equipment. Get your drafting.
Yeah, that's interesting. that's a good point. You know, that I used to keep around. It's funny, just a little while ago I used to keep around, like, a template of circles and shapes and stuff like that. And I guess probably for a lot of us, like even me, I do my mapping digitally now. So probably that isn't quite as much a need.
Yeah,
if someone's
doing
it by hand.
Yeah, I do feel like that has totally been replaced by the computer, probably.
Yeah. There are people that still do it by hand, and good for them. But for me, I you know, digital works better for me, I think.
Cool.
Yeah. What about paper? What kind of paper do you use?
Well, for, like, notes and stuff. For, like, when I'm doing prep work, again, if I'm doing a campaign, like you, I have a three-ring binder, so I have just standard ruled three-ring paper.
Right.
That's what I generally have.
Right.
If I've printed stuff, right, it's just obviously straight printed paper, which I will then three-hole punch to get into my binder.
Right.
I do keep, hang on, got my gaming bag here by my side so I could pull it out. So I do always keep one of these, you know, small-sized pads of paper.
Yeah.
Right, just for scratch to have in front of me. Also, conveniently, that same kind of half size
Yeah.
Which I don't think I put that much thought into. I was just like, I need paper.
Yep.
They also sell pads like that of graph paper, which is really nice. So I buy that sometimes.
Right. Right. For, you know, it's funny for me, as I've gotten more and more minimalist, right? Like, I don't know, some number of years ago, I used to use a full 8x11 pad. And then I went down to a half size pad, like you just showed. And nowadays, what I usually use is index cards.
Yep.
Right. So I have big, big stacks of index cards that I use. And one of the things I've noticed is this is about as much information as you need for one encounter. So when I'm running a game, I jot down everything I need for one encounter. And once that's done, I just throw that away, Letterman style. And like you just said, they have graph paper in index size, right? Yep. So I keep that around for some stuff. And then also some colored sheets like this. So I got some colored sheets and I color code stuff. So like magenta here is for a magic item. Cyan is for an NPC character. And some stuff like that. So nowadays I keep around big, big gobs of index cards all the time. And I find they're really nice for like it's one idea sized.
Yeah.
Right. So one major idea gets on an index card and they're disposable and they've been doing really well for me like that.
Hey, if anybody's watching us live right now and not seeing much in the chat, but just a heads up, I am watching here as our internet is struggling a little today, so apologies for that if it's coming across poorly. I did have the Comcast guy at my house yesterday, so God knows what's happened. But give us a heads up in the chat if like the quality is so bad that you're not able to understand what we're saying.
Oh,
sorry for that interruption. Hope it's not actually bad. Hopefully video buffering saves us all.
Yes. So in the 21st century, you need a good cable connection.
Good internet for sure.
Good internet for sure. Good point.
For your index cards, Dan, are you carrying around one of those old school plastic index card boxes?
That is it. That is it.
Yep.
Just this, right? And it's got a bunch of NPCs in it. It's got blank cards and it's got graph paper and it's got place cards, right?
Yep.
So this little thing gets me pretty darn far. Yeah.
Cool. Couple notes there of some minor stutter, but otherwise it's okay. So hooray for technology, actually.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I get a little light here in the corner that shows me red, green, yellow, and
Dipping
a little more into the red today than I'm usually comfortable with. But anyway.
Thank you guys for checking in on that.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Now I think we get to the really interesting stuff at the bottom of the list here, which is imagination. Love it. One patient referee got some patience and some
players. It's interesting.
Yeah, I love that. Somebody's
having a lot of fun. It belies that DMing takes some time. I think that's what that's signaling there.
Right. That's pretty funny. So you generally happy with this list?
Yeah, there are times when I'm actually surprised by how much it overlaps what I'm still using, almost 50 years later.
It's interesting. Sorry, my eye's just drawn back to the dice, and I notice he's listing specific numbers. Pairs of pretty much everything, and a whole bunch of six-siders.
Exactly.
I suppose that's because in OD&D, hit dice are six-siders.
Right, and I mean, I feel like, and why were hit dice six-siders? Probably because you had a whole mess of D6s.
Right. You went and raided your copy of Monopoly and Clue and all that.
Yeah, or you were, a war gamer to begin with, and you were a bitch, you were accustomed to having big gobs of D6s. I mean, even today you can go, so they don't make Warhammer Fantasy anymore, and I have to get used to that. But Games Workshop still sells boxes of, 50 D6s, and there's no other die type you can buy 50 of at a time.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I like original D&D. I really like the elegance of depending on those D6s more for the hit dice. And that is, and numbers appearing and treasures and stuff like that. So that's one of the things I really like about it. I wish they had not switched to D8s. That's something I will burn my chaps forever.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Fighters D8? Or were they D6 for hit dice?
Right at the beginning, they were like D6 plus one.
Okay. All
right. Right.
So, yep.
So everybody was D6s and fighters were D6 plus one, basically.
Okay.
And that was part of the shift. What kind of dice do you actually have now, and how do you store them?
All right. So, I'm gonna slide back. Oh, here, I'm gonna give up on this this list here. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna slide back here because one of the things I thought would be good for this conversation is I just have my gaming bag here. This is the bag I carry with me anytime I'm like, oh crap, gotta run to a game. Here it is. Yeah. Sort of your old ThinkGeek bag of holding, which I know is pretty popular. Does have a nice top load, easy access zip for the laptop, which is not in here currently. But that's nice for like going through the airport or whatnot. Do I bring a laptop? For 5th edition, I do.
Oh.
For 5th edition, and there's a whole bunch of like qualifiers I'll say for 5th edition. But I find that like for rapid rule lookup, having a couple tabs of D&D Beyond open is just so much faster than flipping through pages.
Okay.
So generally for 5th edition, yes, I'm carrying my laptop.
Okay.
Can't show that to you. It's on the desk streaming right now. here we go.
And it's my usually dice bag. The same. Yeah,
great. This is my Dark Phoenix dice bag. Dark Phoenix has a new convention. Quickly plug that. Rising Phoenix Gaming Convention coming up in late April in Massachusetts here on the East Coast.
For the first time in 2020.
First time in 2020. Yep. RisingPhoenixGameCon.com, I believe. Hopefully I didn't say that wrong. Okay, what do I have in here? I have a mess of D6s, to be honest. There's a lot of D6s in here. And then most of my dice, what I'm usually plucking out of here that I like to roll, are Game Science dice.
Yeah.
Those are my preferred dice.
Okay.
The reason I have a whole lot of D6s in here, though, is nothing to do with D&D and everything to do with Fiasco.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does Fiasco use a lot of D6s? Is that...
Yeah, all D6s.
Okay. Okay,
I also have a few large size dice. This is a percentile.
Yeah.
I got a D6 in there too.
Yeah.
Because bigger dice roll higher.
Roll higher?
It's bigger. You must get more, right?
That's not the reason.
No. Really, I bring those dice out mostly just for that amusement factor of like, oh, okay. I'm rolling like crap. I need bigger dice.
Okay. Actual reason why you'd want to do that. And visibility at the table. Like if you have a big table and a lot of players, sometimes I don't have it right here. So I have a D20. It's about this big and a D6. It's about that big. And sometimes kind of Bill Webb style.
Yep.
I bring the giant versions of the dice, hoping for better visibility by the players at the table. As you do too, Paul, we roll all of our dice in public, invisible to the players.
Yeah.
So sometimes I bring bigger dice so players can read it better.
Those jumbo-sized dice, there was a brief period of time where I thought it was amusing to have only jumbo-sized dice. I have a whole ton of them.
Yeah.
But they're loud and they're heavy and they take up space, and so I kind of moved away from that.
That's exactly my same experience. Yep. That's exactly the fact that they're too loud actually is why I got away from that.
All right, let's see what else is in the bag here. I already showed you my custom. I got my OD&D book in there. I also have my Kindle Fire. When I'm playing 5th edition, this is my character sheet.
Okay.
D&D Beyond, especially the character sheet view, I believe is best optimized for tablet.
Yeah.
So it works okay on your phone, not great.
Yeah.
It works pretty good on a laptop, but I find laptops are bulky and annoying to have at the table. But tablet is really perfect.
You know, there's a fifth reason why I like my documents in digest sized, because that's tablet sized.
Yep.
Right. So coincidentally, I guess historically, right, your original D&D digest is the same size as a modern laptop, modern tablet.
Yep.
So by putting my documents in that size, they're perfectly sized for a tablet that's worth.
I think iPads are actually a little bit larger.
Okay.
I don't have one here on me. I think they're a little bit larger. I think the Kindle Fire is notably kind of small and skinny, but yes, kind of. The exact same size as your half-size book there, which is nice. I like that. But yeah,
and I know that some people are getting away from tablets and relying more purely on smartphones, but the tablet is pretty darn nice for that.
I've used my smartphone for my character in a pinch.
Okay.
It's not great. It's okay, but I think you get just a little bit more real estate on the tablet as a player. Again, as a DM, Now, when I'm running 5th, I want my full laptop there because I'm going to have a browser open with multiple tabs so I can very quickly search for stuff.
Are they the same tabs open all the time? Like, do you have specific stuff you...
For 5th edition, what I usually have is 3 or 4 tabs all open to D&D Beyond. And then at the top of every page on D&D Beyond is their search bar. And so that's usually what I'm using. So any given tab may have different content on it at any moment. I'm just like, I need another one, I need another one, I need another one. Search for this, search for this. So maybe if we're in a combat, I've got 3 tabs worth of different monster stats open. Wow. You know, maybe I'm searching for a quick spell or whatever.
Jeez.
Here's the thing. So the other interesting thing in my book, in my bag here, is a print copy of the 5th edition player's handbook.
Okay.
What I want when I'm DMing versus what I want from when I'm playing is actually radically different. So as a player, I want my tablet for my character sheet, and I want a print book for the player's handbook. Because I think as a player, I'm usually more browsing for information than searching for information.
Okay.
Right? I'm looking at things like, oh, I'm about to level up. What spells should I take? Right? I want to kind of just page through the specific section that applies to my character. I want to page through the wizard section. I want to page through the spells and sort of browse and look. I'm usually not searching. If I was searching, frankly, probably D&D Beyond's already got me covered. I'm just clicking the, oh, I cast this spell. Let me just tap the spell name right here, and boom, there's the stats.
Okay.
As a DM, I'm usually searching. I'm doing very fast targeted searches. So that's when I want keyboard and full laptop so I can just type, give me an answer real quick so I can move on.
That makes sense.
So as a DM, I usually don't have any paper books on me.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, here we go. This is a fun bit. Let's talk about screens. DM screens.
Yeah.
Excellent. This is my preferred screen. I own 3 or 4 of these now. This is made by Studio 2. It is a 3-panel landscape screen. Let me see if I can back up here. You can see it's a 3-panel landscape screen. It's made out of vinyl with a hard center. It's got these clear pockets so you can slide stuff in and out. Yeah, is that you using the same thing?
Same thing. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So I have different art for the outside and different tables and charts and stuff for the inside, depending on what I'm running.
Yeah.
And I'll flip them in and out. Here's a pro tip that I learned early, if you do buy one of these. And I think there's different form factors of these. Some people make a portrait version rather than landscape. I think there's 4-panel ones rather than 3-panel ones. I find 3-panel landscape is ideal for me. I want to try and minimize the barrier between me and my players.
Yeah.
And 3 panels wide is about perfect for hiding what I need to hide and off I go.
I agree.
For the artwork, I have started laminating my artwork.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
The first time I put artwork into one of these, I printed at my work printer, which is a really nice color laser jet printer.
Okay.
And I shoved the artwork in there, and it sat in there for months.
Yeah.
And the ink fused to the cover, to the inside of the plastic, and now I can't remove that artwork from that particular screen anymore.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why I have a bunch of these, is I had that, and I think I had another one rip, so I keep rebuying these things. So I've discovered laminating the artwork makes it slide in and out easier. I have not had the same problem with charts. I think maybe that's just because there's a lot more white and a lot less ink. Also, maybe because I'm printing them at home on my inkjet. I think inkjet does better than color laser.
Okay. Right. Okay. See, I'm testing that. See, now I'm like, oh, God, I need
to... God.
Is that a thing? And so I have my art, which is actually custom from our friend BJ Johnson, big fella, which is delightful. I printed this on an inkjet printer. I do let it dry, right? Mm-hmm. When I know that's sometimes an issue, so I let it dry a little bit before I do anything with it. But that hasn't happened to me, fortunately.
The laminating it, I know it's excessive, but laminating it also makes it a little stiffer and a little easier to just pop in and out.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed. The other thing I'll do often with these things is, even for the interior pages, I usually trim maybe 1/8 of an inch off the sides. That also helps it slide in and out easier.
I kind of have to, actually,
Okay, let's talk another interesting 5th edition thing that relates to the DM screen. You mentioned keeping index cards. I carry around with me a pack of half-sized index cards.
Oh, wacky.
Yeah,
what?
So these are 3 inch by 2.5 inch index cards.
Weird.
Basically just a half of an index card. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
There you go.
Really?
Half-size index card. And the reason for this is if I must do individual initiative, this is the perfect solution.
Okay.
So, grab a pen here. So what I do is I hand one of these to each player, I ask them to fold it in half and write their name on each side, which I'll do right now. Makes a little tiny tent with my name on it. Yep. So when I'm running individual initiative, as I call out initiatives, I put the little tent on the top of my screen like this, and then left to right, I put them in order.
That's
my initiative order. And then I just hang on to these all through the game, so the next time we do another combat roll again, and I stick them on top of my screen.
Okay.
The half size is perfect. It does not overlap with any of the stuff on the interior. Right? It's nice. That's what
Let me just point out is that that's interesting, and obviously in my original games I don't have the individual initiative thing, but I will point out that, so I'm just grabbing one of my index cards from my last game, because I do find, so I was saying like an index card is about good for one encounter, but what the truth is it's good for two encounters. And so you see that what I routinely wind up doing is, here's an encounter that took up half the card line, here's a second encounter. And I do admittedly find that happens over and over again, is here's another two encounters on one card.
You could
maybe I should.
But you're going to have the exact problem I was just complaining about with monster cards, which is you're going to have two different size cards, and you're going to try and organize them. It's going to be a pain in the butt. You're probably better off just drawing a vertical line down the middle for that use case. Okay. The half-size index cards I'm using strictly for initiative counter.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
And when I can get away with it, even in 5th edition, I still prefer group initiative if I can get away with it. And I say if I can get away with it because some characters have special abilities that affect their initiative, and then players get annoyed if you take that away from them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Understood.
Then
I will say the other thing that just for general index card usage, and I think you and me have gotten into the habit the last couple of years, is we give everybody place cards for where they're sitting at the table with character name, who they are, their AC, stuff the DM needs to see.
Admittedly, I usually do that for convention games, but not campaign games.
Okay.
I
do this pretty routinely, and the index cards are additionally good. They just to automatically have that happen if you want.
I agree. Having index cards is great. And by the way, if you have regular size index cards, you could just tear them in half.
And what?
These as well. Don't what? Really need special half size index cards to do this trick.
You know, I will say a little while ago, my partner Isabel got a cutting board. For a long time, we didn't have the slicey cutting board. And man, that made so much easier because I do a lot of slicing with stuff. Yeah. What else do you have in your bag?
Okay, well, I got my pencil case.
Yeah.
Number two's on one side. I'm not a mechanical pencil guy. I like my wood pencils. Mm-hmm. And then some... a couple of Sharpies on the other side, and I always keep, because I'm addicted to game science dice, I always keep a fine point Sharpie as well, which I use for re-inking my dice.
Oh, clever! Oh, wow! Jeez! I think I'm well prepared, and I see your stuff, and I'm like, God, I gotta do some more of that. I gotta do some of that stuff.
Honestly, I would like to find a better solution. At some point, I want to do something to my dice to ink them in a more permanent way, because I'm sick of re-inking them.
I mean, some people, they use, clear nail polish to finish it or something like
that. I've actually just once took some just standard miniature acrylic paint.
Yeah.
You know, douse the front and then wipe it clean to just leave behind. And that works pretty well. So I might just do that, but again, I'm just lazy. Because I prefer wood pencils, I also keep a little battery-powered sharpener.
Yeah, nice.
I think that's about it besides my insanity guards. That's the other thing I got in here.
Should
I plug insanity cards? Insanity.
I think
cards.
We should do that at the end. My idea was we're going to do the plug, our individual plugs at the end. But yes, look for that.
Some of you may have noticed I posted a video recently on my blog about insanity cards. There will be more insanity card news coming soon. But
more insanity card madness.
Yeah, that's all that's in my bag. Okay. That's it. That's the gist of it. Now we can start talking about crazy stuff, unless you have other standard.
Yeah. So same thing for me. So I think, like Paul, you know, like my campaign, I actually run at somebody else's house. So every other week I get to travel, and I have cut down, you know, my stuff to the absolute minimum that is convenient to travel with. And that would be the same for convention games or things like that. So, you know, among my things, like I have a checklist, right? So I have a checklist at the front of my binder of, like, remind myself exactly what I want to take. Mm-hmm. And it's more or less the same, you know, similar kind of stuff. As a player, I like to bring a clipboard, because sometimes there isn't table space for the character sheet or something like that. I use the exact same, you know, screen that Paul does, customized, and I tend to be editing the, you know, the key rules information on the inside.
Yep.
To what's useful. So one thing that I do that's a little different for dice is everybody else I ever see has a big bag of dice, and I don't do that. Instead, I have a like a hardware box, right? And what I did is I got specifically color coded dice. So I have a red set, an orange set, a yellow, a green, blue, and a violet, and also a black set. And so when I travel, I take out the D20s, right? Mm-hmm. And so I travel with a Roy G. Biv D20 set and a Roy G. Biv D6 set. And so particularly when mass combat starts to happen, and maybe I'm peppering the party with a whole bunch of arrows, or they're casting area spells at a whole bunch of monsters, I can just roll 6d20s all at once and go around the table to players and go, you're red, you're orange, you're yellow, you're green, you're blue, you're violet. And with one handful, I can attack everybody all at once to kind of keep the pace up.
Nice.
So I think at some point I realized that I had three or four of the colors already, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy sets just to fill in my whole rainbow that I actually use as an organizing principle of the table.
Nice. I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's nice that you've got them in separate compartments too. That must make it easier. I'm always fishing through my bag looking for, where's that die?
Yeah.
I want that particular one, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I have seen this style of dice pouch where when you open it up, the inside is actually separate compartments. That there's six or so pouches within the pouch.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Does it keep it from falling from one bin to the other?
Yeah, because like when you open it up, right, what you end up with is if you look down at it, it's like looking at like an apple slicer, right? It's sort of right, they're fins, vertical fins.
That's
separating it. So I think yes.
But I never got into the bag. I honestly never got into the dice bag routine, because the other thing is I like to be able to see it from outside, right? So this is transparent, right? So at a glance, I can see whether I'm missing anything or whether I've got everything. So I also like being able to check in on it from outside without opening it up. But that's not many people do that.
I mean, when it comes to dice, everybody's got their own crazy, various dice rituals
So when I travel, here's my minimal set. Here's my color-coded D20s, my color-coded D6s, some more D6s, and then I guess I also have an area hit, and I've got a D3 in there too. So I have a very specific minimal set that I travel to DM with.
Nice.
So I know exactly where everything's going to be as soon as I open that up.
Any other standard gear?
Okay, and the other thing that's probably the newest thing is dice tray, right? So we've used a dice tray for a while, and I had a big hardware one, and that was the single biggest thing that I had to travel with. So just this summer, you know, I saw an ad. I'd never seen this before, but one of these travel collapsible dice trays. Mm-hmm. And now everybody that I play with has one of these. And so I don't know how long these have been on the market, but, man, I wish I'd had this 10 years ago, because this is, like, absolutely the best thing. Fits in my bag, travels easy. So I wish I'd had this before, but now apparently everybody has it, and I wish I'd known before.
How big is that flattened out?
It's less than a sheet of paper.
Yeah, but bigger than a half sheet.
Just barely. So here's my binder, and it's almost the same size.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
I think I bought a slightly smaller one intentionally for that.
I have some pictures of dice trays in my featured list. I don't know if it's time to jump to that or not.
Sure.
Did you want to talk about? I have another image queued up here from you.
Don't worry about that.
Okay. So this now we get into like you. Often I'm traveling for my games. I run them at other people's houses or I run them in my office. But when I'm home, that's when we start getting into like crazy stuff lying around. Right. One of the things I have is this giant chest of dice. This chest I bought at Michael's. You can get you go to whatever your craft store of choice. Sometimes you can find these sort of prefabricated. They're meant to be decorative, but I have this. And I bring this to HelgaCon every year, and this becomes like the communal, like, oh, I need more dice. Here you go. Ridiculous giant chest of dice. I think this comes from a convention where I once like bought the pitcher of dice at one of those.
Okay.
If you ever been to like Gen Con or something, there's always some dice merchant there who's selling it by the pitcher, this huge vat, and they're just like, here you go, here's a pitcher full of dice.
Wow.
There you go. That's where all those dice come from. So this is the round tray. Yeah. I usually have, I have two of these up there on my table. I typically don't use them, but I have some players who have very poor dice control and they like having it.
I'm pretty sure I'm the lead in that list, I think.
Yeah, so we definitely have some players who like having that on hand so they can just pull it. And so usually, actually, most often this is not on my table. It's on a shelf next to my table, so if players want it, they can grab it, but... I did once buy this guy. So this is an interesting little, it's a smaller wood box, which has a little compartment for storage and then a rolling compartment and a magnetized lid. That's nice. It's a bit deep. It's maybe 4 inches deep. So it's kind of bulky. So it's not perfect for travel, but it is smaller. It's, takes up less table space. So if you're at a spot where you need table space, although I think I like your folding one better than this.
That's my killer app for dice rolling now. Yeah.
I have another little prefabbed decorative wood chest that I filled with. I think these are pieces of eight. They're replica coins. I like having this, for various games. At some point, you're going to need a token for something, and I like having a metal coin. I think it feels a little more thematic. So I have those anytime if you're playing something like Warhammer and you need fate points or what are the, playing Savage Worlds, you need bennies, whatever. Anything that needs a token, I usually like to use these coins.
Yeah, I agree. Having it in theme is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Before I dig into this, I'm going to jump back for a second. Hopefully this will remember where we were. Let's talk about miniatures.
Yes, let's.
Excellent. So I think you and I both don't use miniatures very much.
And let me point out, that was nowhere on the original D&D list, right? That was that wasn't no listed. It wasn't optional. It was nowhere on there. And you and I both don't use that now.
So I do often, and when I'm running it at work, I bring a small miniatures box, which holds maybe about 16 miniatures, which I've loaded up with standard adventurer types, right?
Yeah.
Get your wizards and your magic users and your wizards and your clerics and your fighters and some dwarfs and elves and halflings, and I try to get a nice variety of looking different looking stuff so I can hand those out and go, okay, everybody choose a miniature for your character, which I'm often using for stuff like marching order, right?
Yeah.
Or just if the group is in a big combat and they get split into sort of two sub combats, I'll be like, hey, just visually clump the miniatures so I can look at them and go, okay, those are my targets, and then I can randomize or whatever, just to help me visually remember who's where.
Yep.
Right. I'm not actually like measuring stuff. There's no grid, but just as a grouping mechanic. And even in that case, like, I don't have miniatures for the monsters. I just want to know, this is the group who's firing arrows from the ledge, and this is the group who's down fighting melee.
Gotcha. Interesting.
I think it's pretty useful for that, and that just comes naturally once you're using them for marching order anyway. And I think they work way better for marching order than like writing on a piece of paper.
Okay.
I don't have to read. I can just quickly see.
Yeah. just as a little like historical experience with that, right? So the claim from Gygax is that once they started playing D&D, they weren't using miniatures.
Yep.
When I was playing as a kid, I did not use miniatures, largely because I was, you know, cost limited.
Right.
When, you know, we became adults and we were playing third edition, I think we both went through a phase where I got a whole bunch of miniatures and we were playing grid-based third edition stuff. And, you know, after a couple of years, you know, so I had miniatures and I painted them and I even, you know, sculpted some myself. And it was like the game is a little bit slower with that full-on grid play.
I mean, this is maybe a contentious thing to say, but I think that third edition requires miniatures the way it's written. They're built into the system and you just have to have them. This is something I think that actually makes fifth slightly better than third for me, is that fifth is reasonably easy to play without them.
Right. Rounding to the nearest integer, I agree with that. I got away from that late in third edition. And there are times when I consider, you know, so I have battle maps and I have a grid battle map and I have a hex battle map and I have wet erase markers, but I haven't used them in a long time. And I'm pretty happy with being able to, play without it. For me, you know, the funny thing with Marching Order, currently I recommend that my players sit at the table in the standard Marching Order.
Now that's clever. So, I've not seen that. I've definitely used table seating order to be the order that I go around in group initiative.
Right.
I'm just going to go around in a circle. And I've had players game that, and I think that's lovely. I haven't done it with Marching Order. That is clever.
It's like 50-50, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, someone would like to sit with their partner, or a newbie wants to sit with an expert to kind of guide them.
Yep.
And I'm like, we're still doing that in my campaign. And it's like, man, not every day. Sometimes they want to do something else. So I give them an initiative advantage if they sit in marching order. Most of the time it works.
To go back to my original statement, I think miniatures are way better for marching order than paper. If those are your two options. One of the nice things about miniature is they're immediately visible to everyone on the table. And so any arguments are being, no, I want to be in them. No, I want to be here. No, don't put me in the back. Like, those arguments happen really fast. Whereas when it's in one person's head and they're writing on paper and then everybody has to read the paper, it's much slower.
This is one of these things whereby, like, maybe I should do that, but really commit to myself. Like, once the marching order is down there, don't start expanding it to other, like, combat, like, maneuvers. Yep. Like, just, like, stop. Don't move them out of the marching order.
Yep.
But I find once the miniature's on the table, I start to, like, expand the usage in ways that I didn't intend to begin with.
So I will, if the combat warrants it and it's very complicated and I need to keep tabs of a lot of different spatial reasoning and it's getting difficult, then I will pull out the battle mat and play with miniatures if they're handy and it's easy. If I'm at work, sometimes I run games at work. If I'm at work, we're usually in a meeting room, so I'll just draw on a whiteboard. I'm just going to draw, and I'll X's and O's, and that's fine. I try to resist it for as long as I can, but there's some moments where I've gone around the table a couple times, and I realize, like, I'm getting the questions of, wait, where am I? Where is this? Wait, how does that work? And I'm like, okay, words are not fulfilling the need here.
Yeah, it's good to be sensitive to that, right? There's no use being 100% dogmatic when the facts of the table are that that isn't working properly. And I will admit, the last two games, the last game that I ran and the last game that I played, when we both had a problem where the way that we were standing was not clear, and someone made a huge, huge, huge error based on that not being clear. So sometimes that can be a big difference. And I felt bad when it was unclear to my players, and we got hammered as players for similar reasons. So sometimes that's important. Yeah.
So real quick here, I have a couple here on me just for illustration purposes. This is my favorite sort of standard wet erase mat. It's by Crystal Cast, crystalcast.com. It's got squares on one side, hexes on the other. That makes me happy.
Yep. I have the same thing over my closet there.
This is one I stole from you, Dan. This is just a roll of white vinyl that I bought at the fabric store. Works great with wet erase markers.
Yeah.
I will use that sometimes when I'm doing the projector, if I have a projector on the ceiling pointed at the table, and that's at the end of my list of crazy stuff I have, this is really nice because it's nice and bright.
Yeah.
You can see everything, and then you can draw on it as well.
And, you know, let me explain a little bit why I used that at one point, is, and I haven't used that in a while, is that I was getting, with third edition, I was getting frustrated with this grid stuff. I was getting frustrated with this move this way, move that way, one diagonal, move here, avoid an attack of opportunity. A diagonal counts as 1.5 times a square. So I think for about a year, I was like, I'm going to get us away from the grid, but still have a map. So I'll put down this blank white thing. I'll make a space. I'll bring a ruler. I'll make a cave. And you can use the ruler to move around, but we're not in specific grid squares, so we don't turn it into a chess match. So at least for a year or two, I was attempting to use a freeform map just to get away from the grid. And then at that, and then after that, I got rid of the whole map and the miniatures entirely. I will say that I also have a black vinyl sheet just for when I'm doing spaceship combat.
Interesting.
In Star Frontiers.
So what made you give up on the white sheet?
Yeah, still slow. I had to, you know, like, oh, you get jumped by these monsters. Now give me 4 minutes while I draw the situation that you're in. And here's a ruler. Do I have the, where is the ruler? Do you have this? Where's the miniature? It was still dragging down the game a bit. And if I'm traveling, it was a huge, it was, you know, it tripled the amount of stuff I had to carry too.
And the worst offender of that is ultimately Dwarven Forge. I own a ton of Dwarven Forge. Don't ask why. It's a long story. I own a ton of Dwarven Forge. It looks awesome. But, oh my gosh, is that slow. Getting it out, setting it up. You know, you've got, you're not going to bring it with you if you go play somewhere else. And I even tried the, like, I'm just going to describe the room in the combat. If you guys want to pull the Dwarven Forge off the shelves and set it up as I talk, you're welcome to. Even that just slows everything to a crawl.
And, you know, it's a real mixed bag. It's like it looks so great, and there's some excitement to going out to putting that out. But, you know, yeah, and then it's like then you start expanding it, and you don't have enough pieces for something, and then you have a debate about that, and that's not really what the game's supposed to be about. But so obviously Dwarven Forge is run by Stephen Pokorny, and, you know, I've met and played with him at least once. Super, super dedicated to that. He was based here in New York where I am for a long time. I believe he's recently moved to Seattle, is what I think. Believe it's happened. So, so he's out there now. Very, very talented. Looks fantastic.
I mean, his stuff looks amazing. And, I think the best, the most successful I've seen it used is if the DM is going to set it up ahead of time. I've seen that plenty of times where he used like paper or something to block it off. Basically, it's the way Mercer uses it in Critical Role, right? He pre-built stuff and then he just says, whoomp, here it is.
But those are very different from the games we usually run that are tend to be more sandboxy, tend to be more freeform, tend to get driven by, you know, random rolls a lot and going in. I don't know where the players are going to be going specifically from session to session. So that's not really quite the use case for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For that, like having something that's just a grid that you draw on is way better, even if it doesn't look as pretty. So here's another thing I use. One more point. This is gaming paper, which is basically just wrapping paper with a grid printed on it, which actually you'll find most wrapping paper has these days, I guess, on the backside. Often there's an inch square grid on it. This is gaming paper. I think you can get it at gamingpaper.com. I use this for convention games, specifically my Boss Fight for Breakfast games, which are 2-hour games. So the whole game is supposed to be one quick, intense combat. Like very elaborate combat, but one, and it's fast and it's crazy. So what I'll do is the gaming paper is I'll cut it out ahead of time and I'll draw the maps on it in Sharpie, like permanent marker. And then it's ready to go. And at the game, I'm just slapping it onto the table. Here you go. Boom, boom, boom. Maps 1, 2, 3. Because I know exactly what they're going to be ahead of time. I've pre-drawn them so that they look decent. That's a nice option.
That works well. That looks really nice. So maybe so stuff that is a little bit more customized, and so so the other thing, so the thing that, that is a little bit more custom is for all the wizard players at my table. And again, this started when I was using original D&D, and that was out of print. Nowadays, you can totally get copies of that at Drive-Thru RPG, and you should. Mm-hmm. But for a while, it was totally out of print, and there was no way for me to distribute the spells to my wizard players. So I did make my own custom, and this is uses the open gaming license. So I did make a custom spell book, basically compatible with original D&D, and I still use it today. I've kind of refined it with some rulings that I've made over the years that I think a lot of us tend to like. So each of my wizard players at the table gets one of these little tiny digest books with all the spells in it, and this works really well. And I'm happy to have the wizard players, you know, looking at books like wizards should. So I go around and I hand one of these to every wizard player, and it's a really nice. So you don't have like a. So obviously Paul had the fifth edition player's handbook up earlier. And it's nice that you don't need a giant tome to get at this information. And so I kind of like doing this. Alternatively,
I will point out too, that's, I mean, for OD&D, it's almost required just because you can't expect all your players when running OD&D to show up with the three LBBs in their bag, right? They're not going to be like, what is this? You have to tell me.
Exactly. So that's something that I self-publish on lulu.com is where that is, or my original edition Delta website, .com will get you there. Or alternatively, do you have the alternative at hand, Paul?
I don't. Actually, I left them upstairs. Totally
okay.
Forgot. Do you
so
have one?
The alternative that Paul came up with is let's go even smaller. Let's make a deck, not a book of spells. Let's make a deck of spells. And so Paul has made all kinds of nice work with cards lately. And it really supports the game. So here is the same content from my original edition Book of Spells. Deck of Spells is published at Game Crafters. And so I came to my tables, right, and I said, okay, players, you can either use my Book of Spells or you can use Paul's Deck of Spells, I suppose, if you're into that kind of thing. And every single person always takes the deck.
Now, you can tell how early an adopter Dan is there by the fact that his cards are in a plastic baggie. If you go to thegamecrafter.com and look up Deck of Spells, it does come with a box.
I got an early test print.
My copies are actually so worn now that I've actually sleeved them and put them in like Magic the Gathering, you know, boxes.
Nice.
You know, which you can get all that stuff. That's online. Nice. One thing I like with the Deck of Spells, again, if I'm running a convention game and I have a bunch of pre-gen characters, I'll just make custom decks for each pre-gen. And then I'll say, oh, you're playing so-and-so? Here's your deck.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That takes some work, right? So me with my book, I print it out on paper, right? So here's your spell book. Bam. Is how I do it. But, that's delightful. I mean, everybody loves the cards. Paul has just won that. Frankly, and I'm really pissed about it. But Paul clearly just won the viewer's choice award on how to get their spells.
Real quick, I have one other thing here on my desk, which we missed when we were talking about miniatures. This is a silly trick, but again, if you go to your local fabric store, you can get these are macrame brass rings. If you just search on Amazon for macrame brass rings, you'll find these at various radii. Usually a number of inches. This one's there's a 4-inch. Here's a 6-inch. You can get them all the way up to 12-inch. These are great for your radius spells. You know, this is your 15-foot radius. What the hell, cast in a 15-foot radius? I can't think. You need the bigger one if you're doing your 20-foot radius fireball. But just really nice to just plunk it onto the table. Doesn't goes over your miniatures, right? Yep. So you can quickly see exactly where you're.
And again, that's the killer app for that. So I also have those same things, right? And when I was using miniatures, that was what I used. And in fact, I will even say that the radii of the spells in Book of Spells is actually tailored to those.
Those are like,
if there was a problem with it, I actually slightly tweaked the spell radii to actually match the sizes of those rings, actually. Yeah.
Jumped the gun. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us, like, so what is the, so we briefly saw the insanity cards that you had in games. What is the new thing that you're rolling out for that, actually?
So insanity cards are the other project I have up on the Game Crafter. This is a generic insanity mechanic to add to any RPG. It's a nice little box here with a deck of cards. Lets you, you as DM award cards to your players that act as insanity points, and then they have to play them, so they have a little control over the rate that they go insane. These are the original cards. You can see they're jumbo size. They're really big. All the rules are right on there, so that as the player is figuring out, I'm level 2 obsession, it tells them exactly how to roleplay that. A little bulky, takes up a bunch of tabletop space, and because the Game Crafters print on demand a little expensive, or a little more expensive than I was happy about, that deck, that box goes for $25 on the Game Crafter. What I'm experimenting with now is the mini size.
Oh, nice.
There you go. So that's your miniature, I mean, it's just a standard poker size deck.
Right.
It's the same thing, same booklet, same cards. Been reformatted and highly edited to fit on the size of the card. So the text is much more condensed. So you're going to have to do a little bit more interpretation of what the effect is. So, you know, not quite as much to go on for your players, but much better use of the table space. Yep. And cheaper. These should retail for about $16 a deck, as opposed to the 25 of the large one.
Nice.
Another thing I discovered that I didn't realize is I love the Game Crafters tuck boxes. Didn't realize this until I was looking at Insanity cards, but if you're used to any sort of standard playing card tuck box, the really irritating thing is, of course, the flap on the bottom, which pokes up, and then when you put your cards away, the ones in the back stick up, and you got to like shuffle it to get. The Game Crafters tuck boxes don't have that. They're more like, I don't know if you're gonna be able to see this, but it's completely flat on the bottom. There's not an inner tuck. Which is delightful. Crazy thing I discovered.
I will say, so I've kind of been hoping, I've been looking forward to regular play deck size. For me, it makes it easier for me to shuffle, whereas the big giant stuff, I basically can't shuffle it.
Yeah, it's a little cumbersome to shuffle jumbo size cards for sure. And also, if you're running a game where there's a lot of insanity, where stuff really hits the fan at the end, one deck might actually not be enough cards. Or if you have a big table, you have 6 to 8 players, but again, and one deck might not be enough. So being able to have 2 decks on the table, a little easier when they're small.
Right. So Paul's
get one or get 2.
So Paul's system, he does add that very successfully to D&D and Warhammer Fantasy, and you use it for Call of Cthulhu-esque type games.
My horror games are now run with a very stripped-down version of Savage Worlds, actually, with the Insanity cards, really as the driving mechanic of the game.
Great. And I will say that as a player, every time I've seen Paul introduce someone to that runs their own games, they do wind up buying that product and using it, because it is kind of just the killer thing
as a player, my favorite thing about it is the deck is very specific about, okay, you're suffering this insanity at this level, do this, right? It gives you a very specific instruction of what you should do to embody that insanity. So if you're hearing voices, it tells you, talk to the voices, blame them when you do something bad, right? So... yeah, just nice, concise instructions like that to really help players bring that insanity to life.
Yeah, that's great. So very, very briefly, so other things like, you know, so the cards work well for these accessory type things, right? So the spells, it's working well for us, the insanity type mechanic. Again, we both have original AD&D monster cards, right?
Yep.
And we are both just slightly frustrated by the fact that they don't perfectly work well. The AD&D cards left out a whole lot of basic core monsters.
Yes.
And I think we would both like to show the illustration to the players. You see this, right? And have convenient stats on the back. It's a great idea, but they left out a whole stuff in AD&D. There's the Zorbo.
You're fighting
great.
A Zorbo.
Gotta have a Zorbo, but we don't have an orc.
You're fighting a gnoll. But I can't show you the orc because it's not in the deck.
Right. Pretty frustrating. And then the 5th edition monster cards come in these 2 different sizes, and that's hard to manage.
It's
a little frustrating. They haven't quite gotten that right yet. And then I think the last thing I have, the final thing I have is I do have, so this, a couple of years ago, this company does this game mastery map packs of particular locations. And, you know, you can get, you know, a dungeon pack, you can get a ruin pack. I only got one. I specifically got the ship pack, right? And so it seems reasonable to me that in my campaign world, the ships come in kind of stock sizes. So I have these really nice you know, tiles that I can put together for different types of ships if that ever comes up in the game. And I actually really, really like these. The main thing, I think one point, probably like 04, I went to Gen Con. I got in a game that was just a pirate ship fight. That's it. There was nothing else. It was like the whole session was just like, you're going to fight on a pirate ship. And the DM came in and sat down and went, oh, I should have prepared a map. Does anybody have notebook paper? And I was like, you know, if you're coming to Gen Con, right, it's the big thing.
Yeah.
Like, I would at least make a friggin' ship map.
Yeah.
Would have been the first thing I would have made. And so I kind of maybe I went in the other direction. I was like, I'm going to have the best possible ship map if it ever comes up. So I have that.
Crazy. All right. I know we're going a little long here, but I got some more images of just some silly stuff that I want to show.
Show us.
Okay, great. Just real quick, this is called Noteboard. Tim Kask gave me this at TotalCon a couple years ago, and this, I often will shove this into my bag as an emergency stopgap. So it's quite small. It's just this little bag. Crack it open. Inside is a little dry erase marker with a built-in eraser, the little piece of paper, and what looks like a stack of laminated index cards, which unfold into a battle mat. It's got all kinds of grids on it. It's got square grids, hex grids, whatever grid you need. And it just unfolds into this, like, it's not the best battle mat in the world, but it works in a pinch. And it's really small.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
I think you can get that at thenoteboard.com. So that's really nice. This is a ridiculous...
So how big is that when that folds up? Like...
When it's folded, it's the size of an index card. It's maybe it's got to be smaller than this deck of monsters. I think maybe about that size.
Well, I can see it actually. Right, it's going to be 3x5 based on the way that it's.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. 3x5. I knew I was going to do that at some point. Sorry, everyone. I was trying to back up my images here, and I hit the escape button. And into the credits. Show's over. No, wait, I have a little more.
We have this abort, like we have this emergency abort now. If things go really bad on the show, we can at one key press just run for the hills and get out. And that's what you just saw.
It's unfortunately right next to the button I have to press to go forward and back on the images here. So thenoteboard.com, I think they're still making them. It has a nice little carrying bag, so it's cute. This thing's ridiculous. This is called the Battle Top. So I think is also by Crystal Cast, who made the battle mat that I really like, which you see rolled up there. When you open this sucker up, it unfolds and has little legs and goes on top of your table to be a raised... it's exactly the size of the battle mat, raised surface, so that there's plenty of room underneath for like your character stuff. So here's the side view, right? So not in the way of all your books and whatnot, but I've used this exactly once. It's awful.
Okay. It's awful.
It's rickety. It's got the hinge in the middle, which gets in the way. The players inevitably, like if you can imagine trying to have your character sheet and your books that are sort of kind of under it, and you elbow it, and all the miniatures get scattered, and it was not a good purchase.
Okay, that's good to hear, because at first sight, I would think actually that is a good solution for us rolling out the battle map, like on an ad hoc basis, the table's covered with a bunch of stuff, and instead of yanking everything off and putting the battle map down,
the images make it look like it would be good at, right? I was very excited for that myself, but it turns out it's maybe just a little too flimsy, unfortunately.
Okay.
Maybe there's a higher end version that could be made.
Okay, that's good to know.
This is my ceiling mounted projector, which you probably saw us use in our my birthday game that we streamed recently. I just built this custom mount. Here it is close up with a little projector on top of it and a mirror attached to it to cast down onto the tabletop. So, and then I have some software where I can just cast to that and have maps get projected onto my tabletop from above. Pretty neat. Haven't used it a whole lot, to be honest. It's a little excessive, and I don't use miniatures a lot, so what do I need it for? But it's fun.
That's funny because every time I've been to your place, we've used it 3 days straight. So actually, as far as I can tell, it's in constant use at your house.
That's funny. The thing there is, of course, that when you come up here, you've gone through all the trouble to travel up here. I've probably put in a little extra effort to create something.
That makes sense.
So there you go. What else do I have in here? This is my most extravagant purchase, gaming-related purchase ever. This was made by Geek Chic, who I think is out of business now.
Oh.
I think they made high-end gaming furniture. This is the GM's Valet, which I think was the only really useful piece of furniture they made, I thought. Okay. Most of it I thought was a bit much. This thing is a little thing on wheels. It's got a couple of shelves. You can see on the bottom is my whole D&D module collection. The top folds out to make a little surface. I roll this sucker over to the side. So when I'm sitting at the table GMing, on my side I have that side surface to hold all my stuff. And it's got all kinds of cubby holes and drink holders. And even though it's hard to see there, but in sort of behind that first panel is a little filing space. So it has little hanging files up there for all my D&D papers.
And I will say that I've DM'd at your place using that, and actually it was very nice. It's like, that's exactly the kind of paper book holder I exactly want by my elbow. Yeah. So I really appreciate having it.
The downside of it is, as you can see in my gaming space, I have carpeting, and the wheels really don't work very well on the carpet, which kind of sucks, so I really have to drag it around. But it's funny. It was like the cheapest thing that they were selling at the time, which is still not very cheap. But it's like really custom-built furniture specifically for one purpose, which is running D&D games, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
What was the other stuff? Like elaborate, like play tables, probably?
Yeah, big tables with, very elaborate tables is basically what they made, which I've played at, and I always felt like, this is too much.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been great for, like, if we were playing big miniature war games, but...
Yeah.
But you're talking about something that's almost as big and bulky as, like, a pool table, and you're sitting behind this thing, right? And the surface is, like, here. And you're it's too much for me. Too much.
Right. That's what it looked like to my eye as well. So, yeah. Yeah, but that's nice. The Valet is nice. Yep. It's too bad they're not in business. That's too bad.
Yeah, I think they went out of business. I think, don't quote me on that, but I think they went out. But I think there are also other companies that are making custom tables now.
Okay.
This is my Dwarven Forge collection. I just threw that in there because I thought we might talk about Dwarven Forge.
Yeah.
It is, where the heck is it? I used to have it on shelves, and then I boxed it up, and it was sitting in storage for a while, and now it's at, my friend's house, where I go to play on Sunday nights, and I think we pulled it out once.
Okay, interesting. I always kind of liked it being behind you at the table there, but you can
see in that picture of I mean, this is sort of my classic. I'm not finding it.
It used to be where all those games.
Yeah,
are.
There you go. So that big shelving unit of games, which I now use as the backdrop often when I'm doing stuff. That used to all be full of Dwarven Forge instead of board games, but. I think it's more likely that we're going to randomly want one of those board games than we're going to want the Dwarven Forge.
Got to prioritize.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
So
cool.
Towards the end here, we got into like a lot of pretty ostentatious stuff. I think I would probably go back to Dan's original list, the OD&D list, like not really much more than that you need. You know, I started there with my bag of holding next to me just because I'm like, the stuff I really want, it fits in that bag.
Yeah. And I like DMing on the road because it makes me practice that actually. It forces me to really think about what I'm taking and, minimize it and really think about what is the value of this particular item that I'm sticking in my bag to be convenient. So I have it pretty well laser focused nowadays about what I like to use and what I need.
What is the most ostentatious, ridiculous gaming thing you've bought?
Oh man, yeah. That makes me uncomfortable. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of stuff, but I mean, basically, probably my miniatures collection, right? So my miniatures collection, I don't use it a whole lot anymore for D&D stuff, but I do have for wargaming purposes, I do have these big boxes of Warhammer stuff that I've picked up secondhand on the cheap. And so the miniatures are the things that I look at. Kind of wish that I could use more, but don't. So that's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, I have a lot of stuff. When I run horror games, I like to go prop heavy. So I have a lot of stuff that's like specific for a game. Like I wouldn't use this for game. I wouldn't call it gear for gaming in general, but like you know, I have a whole box of Roy G. Biv baseball hats that I use whenever I run Paranoia.
You know, I was just looking at Paranoia Adventures like the other day, and I started to lust after, because I did the same thing back in the day, of these really elaborate material components to Paranoia. For some reason, Paranoia just really brings out that that elaborate setup stuff, and part of me wanted to do it, and part of me wanted to fight against the part of me wanting to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I think that stuff can be fun, but I think that you got to start with an adventure that's fun without that stuff. Great. Then you can layer that stuff in, and it makes it amazing, but, you know, it's not going to make a bad adventure good.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We are gone quite long today, Dan.
We have.
Do you have any final thoughts on gaming gear?
Don't forget about your outsourced survival kids.
Yeah.
I like being minimalist, right? I like being minimalist, and I like knowing what the dice are that I'm going to use. I like my digest-sized paperwork. It has a lot of advantages. And the this new collapsible dice tray that I got this summer is really, really, I wish I've had that for a lot longer time. That is the perfect thing. It's kind of digest size itself, and I'm super happy with that. So,
yeah,
I'm pretty happy with my current standard traveling pack now.
My takeaways here are definitely to look for a half size binder, love that, and look for a one of those traveling dice trays that looks great. I get suckered into stuff, man. I love to experiment with crazy gear. As you can tell, I bought that battle top thing, and I bought all kinds of nonsense. Some of it works out, some of it's great, and most of it, it lasts for a few sessions, and then it gets put on a shelf.
I think that totally benefits us, and I mean, I suppose you could do, like, reviewed stuff in the future, because, you know, the half that has worked out has been real treasures, and I've added some of that to my games, and the half that hasn't worked out, you know, has saved me and other people money, actually. So thank you for trying out that stuff. It's benefited a lot of our other games.
Yeah, sure. Maybe in the future we'll come back to this and have another, like, talk on weird gear that we've bought for games.
Paul is great for testing that stuff out. I'll say that. Paul is great for testing and reviewing that stuff. It's really been wonderful.
Awesome. Yeah. Any last thoughts there, Dan?
That's it. Pretty happy with what I have these days.
Great. If you have any thoughts on weird gaming gear you've bought, stuff you think works, or neat tricks that you've come up with, or stuff that doesn't work and we should avoid, by all means, leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. So drop a comment here in the section of this video, please.
Yes, please. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch under the handle WanderingDM. So please do that.
Our show is available in audio-only formats on all the various podcast providers, as well as our own website, WanderingDMs.com.
That's right. And so thanks to our patrons who support the show currently. And if you'd like to join them, please do visit patreon.com/WanderingDMs. Remember, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, so please join us next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.